Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. It's Saturday morning. It's the Cosmic Citizen. It's a beautiful Easter weekend here in Colorado. I hope the weather is as lovely wherever you are. It's great to be here this morning. I'm here with some dear friends. Crystalyn Beek Larson is my co-host, and Tim Hobbs is on the line, as well as Elizabeth Callahan, both board members of Urantia University, and here to give us the latest update on what's going on with the university. I know everyone's curious about it, and really, really good things are happening. I'll let them tell you all about it. But before I do that, I want to say that I want to remind everyone to tune in Wednesday for Cosmic Citizen, the Wednesday edition hosted by Ann Garner. She always has some great guests on, and if you're not doing anything Wednesday morning, check in with Ann, same time, same channel, Cosmic Citizen. Also next week, we've got a special guest coming on the show, Swami Beyondananda. I hope you guys tune in for the Swami. He's absolutely hysterical. He has a wonderful gift at making light of our religious seriousness, and he's just a blast. So I'm delighted that we're going to have the great Swami B, Swami Beyondananda, next week on the Cosmic Citizen. Also coming up, we're going to be doing a show on emergent Christianity again, hoping to get Pamela Chaddick, and I know Crystalyn will be happy to hear that we might be doing that. And Mo Siegel has agreed to come on in the next month or so and talk about a great project that he is working on, doing beautiful paintings of Jesus' life and teachings from the Urantia book, paintings that have never been done. Things like, you know, embarking at Tarentum, where the man was about to hit his wife and Jesus stepped in and stopped that from happening. And Jesus and Gannett sitting at the lighthouse, commissioning the women's corps. It's going to be great to have Mo on, too. So that's what we got coming up on the Cosmic Citizen. And without further ado, I'm going to open it up for our guests and say good morning, Crystalyn. How are you doing today?
Good morning, Paula. I'm doing very well, thank you. How about you?
It is a beautiful Easter weekend, and so glad to be here. I'll tell you a little bit about our guests. First one is Tim Hobbs. Tim is a businessman from Denver, Colorado. He has a wonderful, have built up over several years, many years, 20 years, a great business called Data Connect Corporation, vital, thriving, splendid businessman. He tries to bring in spiritual practice into everything he does, including his business. It's a big deal for Tim. He is, Tim, are you the president of the Urantia University?
Yes.
Yes, Tim is the president of Urantia University, and Robert Burns is chairman of the board. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yes. And Elizabeth Callahan, both are longtime readers. Elizabeth, you have an amazing story, and I would love for you to tell your story. One of the top Buddhists in the country, on the West Coast especially, and you had an amazing journey, and it's just a delight to get to know you better, and I hope you'll tell us a little bit about your personal story and how you found the Urantia book. So both members are board. Both of our guests are members of the board of Urantia University, and Tim, I'll let you start and tell us what's happening with the university right now.
All righty, very well. For those of you who don't know, the university was the idea of a gentleman by the name of David Nash, and he had two very unique concepts with the university. One is to gather teachers from all over the world and allow them to represent a paper or represent a portion of or an idea for the university, so no one person had so much of a job that we couldn't move forward. And David had worked with me through Paula to start creating this venture. And that was about a year ago. And in a year, we've kind of done a country tour. We haven't done a world tour yet, but we did a country tour to find out what interest was there. And I'm very happy to say there was a lot of interest. We had signed up over 100 teachers that said they were interested, and we formed a board. And we had our first major event in Florida on February 12th through the 15th of this year. So we're well on our way. There was a newsletter put out. If you get a hold of Bill Rocap or myself, you can get a copy of that newsletter. But at the conference, we had our first physical meeting of the board. We had been meeting for a while over the phone. And on that board, just so that everybody kind of catches up, we have Will Sherwood, who was very involved with the School of Meanings and Values, Chris Halverson, who many people know has been doing a workshop-type thing in Boulder on Friday nights and has a massive library built up, and it's quite the scholar in the movement. We have John and Elizabeth Callahan. John Callahan comes from a very unique business world in the franchising arena. And Elizabeth, who will speak a little bit later, she's our secretary and does an artful form of keeping track of what we've done and how we've handled things. So I don't know what we would do without Elizabeth. And then we have myself, who I'm very, very interested in building the community. So for us, the university is about much more than just a place to study. It's about how to take the teachings into the everyday world and to build a community that's self-sustaining. So business, research, practice, events, you know, the whole thing wrapped up. That's where my interest lies. There's another person by the name of Patty Snyder who has helped us a lot with marketing and surveys and collecting the attitudes of people out there. Paula herself is on the board. I noticed she didn't mention that on the radio. I think she's trying to have a low profile here, but Paula is on our board. And we also have Merritt Horn. Merritt Horn is very unique because he actually started with John Hay. He had a lot to do with the beginnings of the Boulder School. So we have the continuing of the Boulder School on our side. A board member then, but now he's going to do much more with the students, is Fred Harris. So Fred Harris has been very involved with us. Bennett Rutenberg, who did a lot of work on the foundation side and the UAI. A lot of people know Andre Redatus, and I think he's been on the radio multiple times. And then last but not least, our chairman of the board is Robert Burns, who keeps us all on our regular calls organized and moving forward. So that's kind of a quick...
And our technical genius, Bill Rocap.
Oh, yes, and Bill Rocap, who's actually helped put together the software. The software for the Urantia University is very neat. Now communities of people can select who they want to have be part of a presentation or storage format or social networking. So now we'll have an unlimited number of users that could come in so the teachers can keep their libraries and the conferences evolved. And that software is called Topics, T-O-P-Y-X. So I know that that's a lot of information very fast. Since Paula kind of led the way in talking about the wonderful Miss Callahan, I think I'll have her speak a little bit about her history and why she's getting involved in the university, if you will, Elizabeth. If you don't mind talking a little bit about yourself, that'd be great.
Thank you, Tim, and thank you, Paula. It's really, really wonderful to be here, and on Easter weekend, too, you know, about resurrection and light and glory and destiny. And I see Urantia University really as being a part of this, too. I reminded, in thinking about Urantia University, some of the wonderful quotes that we read about the educational process in the universe. And I think we all know that one from Paper 30 that says the entire ascendant plan of mortal progression is characterized by the practice of giving out to other beings new truth and experience just as soon as acquired. You don't have to wait, you know, 10,000 years or even a year. It's give it out as soon as it's acquired. Goes on to say that you work your way through the long school of paradise attainment by serving as teachers to those pupils just behind you in the scale of progression. And so some of the things I think about when I think of Urantia University are education. That's a founding principle, to provide an education about the Urantia book. I think of community, where we envision a community of students and teachers and business people, healers and counselors, people of all walks of life who are living in a spiritual manner with each other, with the university as the hub. I think of collaboration. This is a highly interactive process. It's the Urantia University is emerging, you know, even as we're speaking now. And each one of us speaks our vision, our aspirations, our dreams, and hopes about it. We are creating it. And I think of compassion, that our model may be different slightly from other types of schools in that there's an equal emphasis on study and service. In other words, on the one hand, God obviously set up the universe so that we learn about him and we learn about his creation and we learn about his plan and we learn about each other. But the other, what flows out of that actually very naturally is then to put that realization into practice. So that's the process of actualizing what we learn. And I would say, in a nutshell, that's the model for Urantia University, this idea of study and service, of realization and actualization. So we invite everyone to help us, you know, in this very big collaborative project to learn about the Urantia book and truly understand it the best we can, and put that understanding, that knowledge, that spiritual realization into practice, which means basically serve God's children. And I think it means to do whatever we can to bring about the progressive development of this universal spiritual brotherhood in our world, the recognition that God is our Father and we are all children of him. So that's enough for me.
Well, and it's really a monumental task. I know Chrislyn, you probably have something you want to say, don't you?
She says hopefully.
No, I just don't hog the stage here.
Well, I have some questions for you guys, which is, first of all, what was it about the Urantia University model that made you feel like you really wanted to get involved with this?
Is that for
Elizabeth? Go ahead.
Okay. Well, speaking for myself, it really coincided with a vision I had a long time ago to be a part of a spiritual community of practitioners and students and teachers and healers. I had an earlier experience in my life of studying for many years in a Zen Buddhist community in Los Angeles. So part of the background that Paula mentioned was that I am an ordained Zen Buddhist priest. Later, I returned to the Christian studies and my Roman Catholic roots and studied for 2 years in seminary in the Free Catholic Church and am ordained also as a Free Catholic priest. I don't wear any robes anymore. I haven't for a long, long time. My life is just to be in the world with people. Nevertheless, I had this wonderful experience earlier in my life of being part of a committed group of spiritual students, living in a very orderly life, dedicated to noble spiritual principles, and it was an amazing experience that lasted for 7 years before I graduated and moved on. So I know we can create a Marantxa-type community here in this world when we forget ourselves and dedicate ourselves to the higher calling of serving others.
Now, the Buddhist community that you were with, were you all living together as well as studying together?
That is correct. We had about, that time, a square block of buildings in Los Angeles, and that formed the Zen Center of Los Angeles. So there was a residential community of probably 125 people. There were several teachers. There were families, single people, couples. And then we had a larger outside membership, probably a couple thousand people. And then students would come from other parts of the country and even from around the world to do periodic residential training there. So we were a teaching center. We also had a school of Buddhist studies on the grounds and had two large meditation halls and offered instruction and Zen retreats called Sesshin every week, just about every week, and then a major one every month. So we were dedicated to training and practice and balancing it with work. In a way, it's a similar model as the Marantxa model, which is to study and work and rest. And we're told that our time will be pretty well divided among those activities in the ages to come. So we're following a universe pattern in setting up Urantxa University. So because I had that wonderful, wonderful experience of what it's like to live in a spiritual community dedicated to realization and actualization, it resonated when I heard this inaugural idea of Urantxa University. And I could see the possibilities. Now, if you talk to any one of the people involved in the project, each will have a unique vision for the university based on their life experiences and their dreams and aspirations. And I think the wonderful experience for me is working collaboratively with everyone and harmonizing our visions. And that's, if you think about it, I mean, that's what we're going to be doing for eternity, is learning how to work together with all kinds of creative beings and work together to achieve a greater plan. So I just see Urantxa University as being part of it. There's that other wonderful quote, I think it's paper 48, that says, if the gods designed merely to take you on one long and eternal joy excursion, they certainly would not so largely turn the whole universe into one vast and intricate practical training school, and then requisition a substantial part of the celestial creation as teachers and instructors, and then spend ages upon ages piloting you one by one through this gigantic universe school of experiential training. So that tells us, it's something that really stands out for me when I read that. It's that idea of a practical training school. Yes, we want to help students realize everything they can in each paper of the Urantia book, but it needs to be practical. And I think when we talk to people, right, Tim, in Florida, about what did they want from Urantia University?
Yeah.
So often we heard they want to be able to put these living spiritual truths into practice. They want help in learning how to do that better in their lives. Okay, I'm going to be quiet. Tim, what do you say?
Well, you're doing a great job. And go ahead, Tim. Tell us about what went on in Florida. And it was just a great launch for the university.
Oh, Florida was an excellent launch. And let me take things back a little bit. I had been doing a lot of work in Florida, and Crystalline, nonetheless, had said, Tim, why do you do all this work in Florida and you don't do anything in Colorado? And so then I had become the vice president of the Rocky Mountain Spiritual Fellowship, and now I'm the president of the Rocky Mountain Spiritual Fellowship. But in between the two, before I had met David Nash, they said, Tim, would you be president of this fellowship? And I said, well, I don't want to just do events. I'm not interested in just the social interaction. I think the social interaction is very important, but I want to do more than that. And I wish I remember who it was, but somebody during that time said, Tim, would you think about restarting a Boulder school? And the next day, David Nash had contacted me. So when funny things happen in a row, you tend to kind of listen. And I had never thought about doing that before. And then it hit me that, you know, one of our first projects was to build study groups around the world, let people know that this Urantia book is out there. And our second need was to develop leaders and teachers. You know, we've been given an incredible gift with this book. It's a blueprint on what life could be like, you know, where we've come, where we are, but most importantly, where we're destined to be. And to me, we were doing a good job on finding study groups, but to date, we don't have anything formal at all to create leaders and teachers. And this seems to be an ideal place to do that. Universities are meant to do research. They're not meant to be stagnant or quiet. And the Urantia book itself, it says that once you have a written word, that word is dead. It's not living. It's not building. It's not growing. So to me, the university is meant to build on the foundations of the Urantia book, become a living example of what's possible on our planet and where we're going. Well, that takes us to Florida. Florida has been one of the longest running individual groups to do sessions and meetings and conferences, and they have been doing this for, well, I don't know, 20 plus years. On an annual basis. And they are very committed to the teachings of the Urantia book based on whatever politics are going on. They don't get involved. They are very open to speakers from everywhere. So they were just an ideal place to launch. And they just took us on with open arms, and they let the balance of the conference be about the university. And so we had our online system. People from all over the world could log into the system and watch the conference as it was going on. And it was just a beautiful initial meeting of the board. We actually had some talks of what we've done on the introduction. There's quite a few people putting together a beautiful 12-week course that takes the nice elements of the Urantia book and puts it in a place where somebody who had never seen the Urantia book before would get a really good, strong feeling about that. And then our goal is to share that with study groups or other people and have it be an initial course for people to come in to see if they would like to do more with the university. And in the meantime, we've just had a tremendous response. Bill Rocap was just telling me the other day that we've got volunteers now from South Africa, from Korea, from all over the planet that are very, very interested in being a part of this university.
That's
that's what's so amazing about it, I think. And I have told you this, Tim and Elizabeth, both. You know, I've sat at the end of an 800 number for more than 20 years now in the Urantia movement, and I've gotten lots of calls from lots of people who have lots of things going on and ideas galore and seen lots of projects come and go. But I have never seen a project capture more people's imagination than this one. And as I understand it, we have 140 teachers now who have signed up at least their intention to be involved and that they want to teach a paper. And David Nash's original idea was just that everybody would teach one paper, just be responsible for one paper. And what he told me originally was it's like Fahrenheit 451, that great book, where, you know, the government was burning all the books, and so there was this group of people that just took on a book and memorized it by heart, became absolutely responsible for that magnificent piece of literature, and so that, you know, you can burn books, but, you know, what's in someone's heart is there forever. And so they would recite these books to each other for each other's edification, and they became literally living books. And Dave, when Dave told me that originally, I was just so sparked by that because he said, you know, all anybody has to do really is be responsible for a paper from the Urantia book and teach that paper and just really master that paper and be able to teach it well. And I thought, you know, just about anybody could do that. Any sincere student of the Urantia book could do that. That's a doable thing. And so his initial offering was to send out that what he called the didactic structure and get people to sign up and just say and just state their intention. But right now I know we have a teacher application form done, right? Patricia Snyder has, she's just the master at online forms and holds a master's degree in anthropology, an amazing person. The folks on this board are just incredible people. Again, getting back to the fact that it's been able to capture the attention and imagination of some really outstanding Urantia book readers. And Patricia created an online application that's available now, and we also have the topic site is coming on board, right? So where do you remember, either one of you guys remember where people can find that application?
What you can do is, go ahead.
No, Tim, you may know even more recent information than me.
If you go to the Urantia University org site, so it's www.urantiauniversity.org.
One word.
One word. And that will take you to the different places that you need to go. It'll swing you directly to this, what we call this topics portal, and that's for the teachers and students. And so then if you respond to that, you can get a teacher application, you can talk with Bill Rocap. But anyway, that's kind of the information site for our program.
And for our listeners, Tim, can you explain more about the didactic teaching method?
It's a pretty simple structure. The idea was you would have, just like Paula mentioned, a person that would take on a paper, and then you'd have a manager, if you will, or a mentor that took care of 12 teachers. So you'd have 12 teachers being supported by this administrator-type person that would help people understand the software, understand how the classes were going to work. And then on top of that, you had kind of this master person who was handling 12 of these mentors. And so if you take 12 times 12, you have 144 teachers that you're managing. Now, some of the papers, two or three of the papers, are based on one topic. You know, you have the thought adjuster papers, you have other logical units that you might have one teacher do. So a teacher may do more than one paper. But by and large, You have 12 people who are managing 144 students. So 12 people manage 12 mentors that manage 12 students. So in that way, there's not so much burden on any one person. And the idea for people who are interested in being teachers is very simple. It's, you know, filling out a form, seeing what you'd be involved in, whether you want to be a teacher or a student. And you would fill out that form, talk about what your favorite papers were going to be, and then you'd have maybe a year or two to work on that paper, and then you would be able to deliver that. So the idea was for a couple of weeks a year, you would be committed to the instruction of that one paper. Now, that's the didactic structure. What we found is that the teachers were kind of confused. They said, well, we don't know what format to use. We don't know what software to use. We don't know how to do all this. And wouldn't it be nice to kind of have an introduction before people got started? So where we are today is really looking for volunteers that will help us put this structure together. We're continuing on the introduction. This summer, the next two events that we're going to be doing, we're going to be working at both the Montreal event, the Rancho Family Festival, I believe it's called, out in Montreal around July, the beginning of July. And then mid-July, we'll be at the conference during the education conference that the fellowship puts on. And in those two conferences, we're actually going to have computers set up so that everybody can communicate online with the board. We're going to have panels, we're going to have workshops, and we're going to start training the teachers and putting them within a what they call the pedagogy that Merritt Horn's working on. And so now we're actually going to have a training program for those teachers to fit within. And then our hope is to start on the introduction by fall. We have been at these sessions, been giving people tastes of what we've created so far, and so far our speakers and the classes have really been a hit, but we're not yet teaching the general public. The first thing we'll do is we'll use each other as the teachers as a guinea pig, and so we'll teach to each other and get the, you know, kinks kind of ironed out, and then we'll be going through more of a formal process with the public.
And initially, this is designed to be an online university, is that correct?
Initially, it's online, and we're actually gathering funds. My company, Data Connect, is going to buy a building, and I happen to know some of the people there, and they are helping us create a kind of a lecture hall or an administrative type platform, so that we can actually have a physical presence. So the idea eventually is to have a campus, but not one single campus, be representative. So if somebody wants to build other campuses, we can too. And we've been very fortunate to also have the Historical Society jump in, and the Historical Society is putting everything that they have from the history from all over and putting that online. So we're just going to have a tremendous library and resource that people can use online as well as present. And the idea is by the time we do the classes, you would have a physical group of people, maybe a study group or whatever, where the teacher is actually there with a physical group of people, and they can be online all over the world. So a student doesn't have to drive to class. And then the hope is that quarterly people will actually be able to attend the class. And one of the patterns that we have that we're borrowing from, and I know Will Smith is very interested in this happening, and I think Elizabeth is going to do the program, is with Santa Monica University, so we're kind of borrowing from them. And Elizabeth, if you don't mind, could you take a couple minutes and talk about what that is to give people an idea?
Yeah, the University of Santa Monica developed almost 30 years ago a graduate training program leading to a master's degree in spiritual psychology. And as far as I know from my own researches, there's no other program like it in the world that specifically addresses the area of spiritual psychology. In other words, recognizes that the core of a human being is spiritual. The spirit lives within each person and manifests as love. so that in order to address the psychological well-being of a human being, we need to include the dimension of their spiritual beingness. So I am now applying to start that program this fall. And Will Sherwood, who is on the board of trustees of Urantia University, completed that master's program recently. So I see that the content of that program, the principles of that program, the techniques of that program being useful in what I would call a Urantia school of living. So I'm very interested in the kind of the outflowing side of this process, the service side of it. How do you, and actually so are the teachers on the learning side of it. I've heard a number of them, I mean, Chris and Andre and Merritt talk about their goal in the classroom is to truly bring out the living spiritual truth in each of the papers that are being studied so that at the end of the class, at the end of each day, the students have realized it. They have discovered ways that they can amplify this practice in their own daily lives. They can relate it to what their human experience is in a very transformational way. And, I mean, to me that means leading us to becoming more loving human beings, to have a greater apprehension of beauty and truth and goodness in our lives. And, you know, just if I could quickly bring up last night in our study group, we read from paper 180, that's, you know, Jesus' farewell discourse at the conclusion of the Last Supper. And, of course, we know that he gave a higher commandment to his apostles in that discourse. And he said, more than just loving one another as you love yourself, I'm asking you to love each other even as I have loved you. And it's such a beautiful paper. And so we raise the question, well, what is it to love as Jesus loves us? And I noticed initially when the group members were talking about it, they were using love to define love. They were kind of talking around it and saying, well, you know, the way Jesus loves us. Well, what is that? You know, how do you describe that? How do we know that we're being like Jesus, loving other people? And that led, oh my gosh, to such a rich kind of transformational sharing among all the members, such that by the end of the evening, we were expanded. You know, each person had just a fuller, richer, deeper understanding of, you know, how it's really the reality of the realization of how God loves us, the spirit of the Son, and the spirit of loving the spirit of the Father, that relationship and realizing it. And so we can describe that. Now, if you just read that in a book, it's words on a piece of paper. What does it mean for us to be that? We have to be able to describe it and so that we know that we're being that and behaving that way. So it was so fruitful, and I think that this is what the teachers of these papers are going to be after, to realize, of course, for themselves, and then to discover this living truth in the living classroom with the learner group, with this learning community, and then put that into practice in your daily life, consciously, deliberately, by an act of will, say, this is who I want to be. This is how I want to live my life. I want to expand, you know, as a spiritually aware and loving person. Well, anyway, I think you get the message. I don't want to
on
about it.
I want to share a quote, because what you just said is so poignant to me, and what came to mind was this beautiful quote from paper 2, The Nature of God, and it's from section 5, The Love of God, almost down to the bottom of the section, the last paragraph before the bottom. The author of the paper says, and I'm pretty sure this guy's at a divine counselor, this is a divine counselor talking,
yeah,
he says, at times I am almost pained to be compelled to portray the divine affection of Heavenly Father for His universe children by the employment of the human word symbol, love. Term, even though it does connote man's highest concept of the mortal relations of respect and devotion, is so frequently designative of so much of human relationship that is wholly ignoble and utterly unfit to be known by any word, which is also used to indicate the matchless affection of the living God for his universe creatures. How unfortunate that I cannot make use of some supernal and exclusive term which would convey to the mind of man the true nature and exquisitely beautiful significance of the divine affection of the Paradise Father.
Oh.
And, you know, we can take one concept from the book, like love, and study what the book has to say about that for a lifetime.
Yes.
And what I see Urantia University doing, really, is taking our serious, scholarly investigation of these concepts to the next level, really kicking it up a notch. And, you know, I think that, you know, a lot of times in my experience with projects like this, especially ambitious projects like this, this is a very ambitious project. And when I look at the board and how committed all of you are, my heart just leaps because I'm so thrilled to see the level of your commitment and the energy and effort that you're all putting into this. It just does my heart so good. I think what this movement needs more than anything else is an infusion of that, because we have big work, and I think the problem has been with us, we're overwhelmed by it, and we're overwhelmed by the magnitude of it. We've spent the last 55 years and more studying it fervently. I think we got it now, and I think we can teach it, and I think we can have a university, and I think we can have all of the things that we desire to do for this planet. I think we can do. We just need to really focus on those things and step up to another level of our own personal commitment. And I know it means more time, it means more effort, more energy, but we've got to do it, folks, because if we don't do it, it's not going to get done. And if it isn't us, who is it then? Who are these people that are going to step up and really spread these teachings of this magnificent book? Go ahead, Elizabeth.
I was going to say, it sparks my mind to think about the creative religionists that the Urantia book alludes to. And if not us, who is it? I mean, each one of us can just take on that challenge. It's how thrilling is that, you know, to think, what does it mean to be a creative religionist in this moment, in this hour? And my thoughts go to how do we reach the tens and millions of young people, you know, who are disillusioned for so many reasons with traditional mainline churches, but they're hungry spiritually. They just don't want to hear a dogmatic presentation. I mean, I've had enough conversations with all the, you know, the 20-somethings in my life and teenage kids and grandkids and whatever to know they just don't want to hear a package, a formula that seems old and out of date. But they're very, very open to hearing just what you said from paper two, the magnificent experience of what it is to love one another as the Father loves us and in a brotherly and sisterly way. I mean, volunteerism has never been at a higher level in America. And what does it say? Kids, people, everybody wants to help other people in meaningful ways. And I think the ideas that we can share through Urantia University they're universal. They can go underneath the radar. They can transcend religious belief systems because they come right from paradise. These are beautiful, pregnant expressions of God's love for us, and I think that cuts through everything. And I think our challenge is to find ways to just put it out there, so that it can be heard and received in today's environment and in the cultural society that we live in. So we've got to go to where people are. We have to communicate with them in ways that they're now communicating with each other. So we've got topics as a platform. We've got web conferencing, and our classroom is going to be televised. We can Twitter and tweet and go to Facebook, and we have to. You know, sometimes people say, well, I don't need Durant University. I've been studying it for years. That's fine, but what about the rest of the world, you know, that we're trying to reach? I'm not doing this for me. We're not doing this for us. We're doing this for everyone who really wants to learn. Okay, I'll be quiet.
What
is the process by which students get involved in this?
Okay, so here's the order that they do it. So they go to urantiauniversity.org that we mentioned. And that's a little bit of the page that David Nash had started creating. And the very first line is a word called interactics. And right below that, it'll say, click on topics portal for registered teachers and students. So if everybody goes to interactics, that'll take you to this portal that everybody talks about. And then you can sign up there. Now, also, I think Bill Rocap is keeping tabs on everybody, too. And his web email, as a matter of fact, we all have this type of email. It's his first name, Bill, B-I-L-L, dot Rocap, R-O-C-A-P, at Urantia University, all one word, .net. And all of our emails are that way.
Dot net, not dot org yet. Okay.
We're going to hopefully redirect the dot orgs, but one thing at a time. So it's tim.hobbs@urantiauniversity.net. You know, it's elizabeth.callahan@urantiauniversity.net. So anyway,
how many people are there currently on the board?
We 12. Right now have 12 people on the board.
All right.
So, and I know that we're talking on and on. Do we need to open up for questions for people?
For Easter service.
Well, and we've got something special planned for Easter service today. It's a special surprise. I was telling Elizabeth and Crystalline and Tim earlier before the show that our dear friends Pat O'Banton and Diane LeBrec are going to be calling in. They're going to do a little Easter service for us today. And that's the last 30 minutes of the show, so stay tuned. You won't want to miss this. Pato has been recording a brand new version of The Words of Christ, Part 3. I don't know if you've heard The Words of Christ, Part 1 and Part 2, but they're just absolutely sublime. Pato's just finished recording in Boston The Words of Christ, Part 3. He has sent us a file, which our Able technician Larry has uploaded for us, so we're going to play that. It's right from the new edition. And so that's going to be special. Be sure and hang on. But that's going to be the last 30 minutes of today's show that we're going to do that. So we still have, 45 minutes to talk about the university.
Oh, wonderful. Okay.
So we're doing good. And I wanted to make a comment. Also, Tim, you mentioned if there's callers. Let me take a moment to invite callers. You bet. You guys, if you have some questions for Tim and Elizabeth, please do call. The call-in number is 646-716-8158. We'd welcome your calls and your questions and comments. I want to touch on something that Elizabeth said a minute ago, that, the people who say, well, why do we need this? We've been studying this thing for 30 years. Why do we need a university? And what's the purpose? That's a question you get a lot. And what occurs to me is anybody who ever sat in on one of Chris Halverson's classes on Friday night knows exactly why we need it. Because there is a resource of teachers in this movement, and it's a darn shame that they don't have a broader classroom. That, you know, hey, we're lucky in Boulder. We could go every night, every Friday night, and listen to Chris, the PhD in science, expound on the most, you know, he has the most incredible insights. We've had him on the show. He's really amazing. And Andre Redatus and Merritt Horn and, you know, Elizabeth and Bill and Robert and Will Sherwood, and I could go on and on all day naming leaders in this movement. They're all over the country. They have a tremendous knowledge and insight about the teachings. But not only that, every study group that goes on, each study group has a nice mix of spiritual and philosophical and scientific minds, and they share their wisdom and insight. There's absolutely no reason why we can't broaden that sharing so that we can all benefit from these great teachers and students of the book. So I think that's what Urantia University is going to do, and Topics makes it possible. Tim, maybe you can tell us a little more about Topics, because it really is a robust site and program that allows us to do a lot of different things.
Topics is what they call an interactive portal. So it not only will help us physically do our classes, but the amazing thing with Topics is it becomes a working laboratory for anybody and whatever projects they have. So, for example, the Urantia entrepreneurs are getting together and saying, you know, we don't even know who in the Urantia movement works for a place. So let's suppose somebody studies the teachings through the university or on their own or through a study group, and they wanted to work for a business who really adopts those teachings. Maybe they want to work for Data Connect someday, or some Dan Amix is running this out in Florida, and he has optical stores. And it's just entrepreneurs and people all over the world. And so they could log into Topics, and even if they didn't want to do a class, they could look at a community. So you can create your own communities and Topics. You can say, well, we want to have a community around the historical society, or we want to have a community around building a game. We have some people who actually want to build an interactive game for kids that have kind of elements of traveling the universe and the decisions you make. If they're good, God comes down and says, I'm well pleased, or if they're bad, there's a salt shaker and you're a slug and you kind of dissolve away. But, you know, we have people who want to do all kinds of fun things with this portal. And it every part in it has other links. So you can link to the Facebook social network, or the Facebook social network can take you back to Topics. It's a way to create social networking around the Urantia University.
So if I understand you correctly, then someone chooses a topic and they can just sort of pursue as much information as they can on that particular topic before they go on to another?
Yeah, and if you logged into Topics, you would have your profile that you create, or you would have a classroom that you want to go to, and you could see what other classrooms people are using. You could look at already recorded projects. You can manage subjects. You can, if you're an administrator, you can manage users and or create groups. There's publishing tools there, so if you want to publish announcements or create events. So in the future, I mean, we're just scratching the surface of what's possible, but in the future, this could be a hub for the whole Urantia movement community. And Topics has done a beautiful thing for us. Most software charges you per user, like a Blackboard or something like that. They're allowing us in Urantia movement to have an unlimited number of users. So when you log in, there's an iLink class, I mean, a classroom you can go to where, you know, it's more of a formal thing, and you go to the class just like you did with Blog Talk Radio, and you can say, okay, this class is going to start at this particular time. So you can use that as an online university. But you can go to catalogs or communities or look at materials that have been uploaded, and we have some test ones there. So we have, you know, a list of core classes and what things you need as a demo, you know, stuff clear back from William Sadler and work like that. So
can you have more than one person on at a, can you have a, like a whole classroom of people on at the same time?
You can have 1,000 people on at the same time if you wanted to.
Well, and we have a question from the board too, and that is the nice thing about the board is people don't have to call in to ask questions. They can just ask them on the board. So Lou on the board would like to know if you plan to have a brick-and-mortar university at some point.
The plan
yeah,
is
you
to have
about
some kind of brick-and-mortar within 3 years. So right now we're looking for people who we actually have a group that are funding buying a building for the entrepreneurs of the crowd. We don't think there will be a cheaper time to buy a commercial building in our lifetime than in the next couple of years. So the timing is perfect for us. So
and
we
are
accumulating funds for that. The initial one will be in Denver, Colorado.
Hey!
So, yes, the initial one will be in Colorado. I think that Data Connect is probably going to put $1 million to $2 million towards it, so it's a good start. And we would like to build from there. So, yeah, the intention is to have a brick-and-mortar place. People need to go to a place. They need to be with other people. Now, on top of that, our intention, and right now we're doing it about twice a year, but our intention is to physically have some event at least quarterly where people can get together in different parts of the world. You know, they might not be able to fly to Colorado. I will be going to South Africa in about a month and a half and be talking to some people out there. But quite the, it's going to be quite the deal having the physical space.
Well, and this is something that I really appreciate, is that there's some far-seeing planning going on. And big dreams, man. I think one of the things that has held our movement back is our lack of creative imagination in some ways. And our you know, we never dreamed big about what we could do. And this is a big dream, and I really feel like it's going to happen. You've got a lot of wonderful things in place, like UB Entrepreneurs. That in itself is a great project. It's a thrilling project, and it makes you wonder when you hear the idea, you go, wow, why haven't we done this before? You know?
Love to hear Tim say more about that idea of the entrepreneurs and the network of supporting one another. And, you know, in reference even the Mormon community and how they've been successful in that model.
Go ahead, Tim. Give us a rundown on that.
Well, the idea was pretty simple. I have to tell a little bit of a story. I'm sorry. Everybody who hears me talk about that has to hear this Tim 5 thing. So I took 5 principles from the Urantia book and applied them to my business. And so in entrepreneur speak, I said, okay, everybody here who works at the company has to grow. They have to personally grow. They have to come with goals and visions of who they want to be, and they have to help the company grow. Well, in Urantian terms, that's be you perfect as the Father in heaven is perfect. You know, it just fits. And the second one was profit. Everybody in the business world understands profit. You go to businesses. Well, in the Urantian world, that's sustainability. What are we doing to be a good steward? You know, the parable of the talents, you know, that whole world. The third one was ethics, and this is one that Dan Amos really centers around. A lot of us in life compartmentalize. We say, well, that's just business. I hate that saying. But it's Dan was talking about somebody the other day that was a person he knew from a religious organization. They said they had a windfall the other day. Dan said, well, what do you mean? And they said, well, one of my big vendors forgot to charge me. And, you know, you kind of wonder, now, how is this person living their life on the one end, you know, really loves God and loves the pursuit of God, but all of a sudden when they enter the business community, they think that that's a different door and that the spiritual world fades away. Well, it doesn't. You know, and so ethics in your ancient terms is love each other as I have loved you. And then there's have fun. You know, sometimes we take our jobs and our business so seriously, but this is our life. You know, part of that should be having fun. And in your ancient terms, that's celebrate, you know, your life. Celebrate being a part of God's kingdom. And the last one, and probably the most important in business terms, is empowerment. You know, if somebody gets hit by a bus or leaves or does whatever, you've lost that knowledge in that business. In your ranch terms, we don't get to count something until we've taught it to somebody else. So in the beginning, when I put these terms together, I didn't put my name on it. I just said, here's what we're going to aspire to, and my employees didn't listen to it. And so then I said, okay, this is Tim 5. Your job depends on you doing these principles. And then all of a sudden, people started caring about that. Well, what happened was we had gigantic clients come to us because of our principles. We actually gained one of the big clients that came to us because of those principles was McDonald's and Gordon Foods and the United Natural Foods. You know, we have incredible clients that have come to us because of these principles. Well, Dan Amex, who's running Urantia Entrepreneurs, uses the Tim 5 as an example of a business that would be what the Urantia Entrepreneurs would want. And he's got three different levels. So in Urantia Entrepreneurs, the first level is, let's just let the community know who's doing a business out there. So it's kind of a blue pages. So, and I think he has something on Facebook with Urantia Entrepreneurs, if you want to get onto Facebook and look that up,
right,
or that group.
Right.
You know, what's the businesses out there? So we hope to kind of publish a blue pages, and I think we're speaking about that at the summer conference, the Urantia Entrepreneurs. But the second level is for people who say, okay, what we really want to do is share expertises. So, you know, if somebody has marketing expertises or fundraising expertises or whatever that is, let people know because they want to be more involved and help people build their businesses. And at the core level, and I have two groups, I have Critical Connect and Tim, and there's actually a venture group, Tim 5, that we actually put financial means in there. So we actually help people financially build their businesses. So, but that's a hardcore group. That's people that you learn to trust with and build with, and you really get to know each other because now you're talking dollars crossing the table. But little things that we're doing right now is thinking about a community card. In my business, we print one of those plastic cards like you get that's a loyalty card or a credit card. We're going to create a community card and allow the businesses to participate through that. And I have some people who will do caterings. I have some people who will do glasses and stuff like that. So in the entrepreneur program, our hope is to start letting people know that this is what the entrepreneurs are doing. And Paula said it beautifully. You know, there's different communities, whether it's the Catholic community, the Mormon community, a lot of communities will come together, and they don't just worship together. They actually build their lives and their business together. That's the way it was done by everybody 100 years ago. And we forget that. We forget that in our nature, in our life, everything used to be a husband and wife. It used to be a family business. And because of the Industrial Revolution, we've just whacked everything apart. We've split families up. We have people go and we tell them that they need to be a slave and work for a company for 30 years, and then hopefully they can retire and have 2 or 3 years of peace before they die. You know, we bought into that. And today's youth is not willing to buy into that anymore. So we're taking the Urantia book and we're taking entrepreneurs and we're reinventing what's possible out there. Sorry,
that's
see if you get me started, see what happens.
No. That's why we invited you on, Tim.
And that'll be a way to really fund Urantia University and underwrite a lot of its educational activities. So I see it very, we're creating a synergistic system here. that reaches out to all of these aspects, these parts of our daily lives, and everything is integrated and interacting. So university is not just going to be teachers and students in a very strict, limited sense, right? It sounds like we're going to be involved in the business activities of our local community. We're going to be in supportive networks with one another. We'll be connecting with each other through big social networks like Facebook and whatever comes beyond Facebook. We'll be able to have this kind of live video communication going on with people in our classes and in our community groups, you know, in Urantia University around the world. So be very highly, densely interconnected. I'm thinking about iPad. Go ahead.
A nice way to roll this together is David Nash. Back to David Nash. He was working with Harvard with this project to manage fatigue and risk in businesses. I don't know how many people know this, but the major accidents in our world have been fatigue-related. Three Mile Island, Exxon Valdez, there's just countless. More than drugs and alcohol combined are accidents by people falling asleep behind the wheel. And he was about to build a business with Harvard, and when he and I got together, he said, well, what I'd rather do is have a huge amount of my proceeds go towards the Urantia University and to people that want to do projects within that. And I'm very happy to report that we had a successful incubation period with David's company. He now has, it's called PRISM. It stands for Predictive Risk Intelligent Safety Module. And he's got one of the world's largest mining groups that are now going to beta his software. Data Connect has helped prototype that software. And I was just with the attorneys, and he kept his word. He's putting 20% of the ownership in his company in a foundation's hands for the university and other people's work. So, you know, it's just a beautiful model that we're building.
Which is not about the individual profit motive. It's we're sharing it in a family kind of way. Okay, go ahead. Was that you?
It was Crystalyn. I just wanted to say, and do you have ways for other entrepreneurs in the Urantia movement to join in that model?
Well, the first one thing is to start contact with Dan Ingrix. And go to the Urantia Entrepreneur site on Facebook, or you could get into that topic thing that I talked about before and just say that you're interested in the entrepreneur program. And I know that Dan is putting a list of businesses together. I know he wants to have a conference at the summer study program, and what he's interested in is what people would come together in a forum to create more. Right now, the inner circle is a fairly tight inner circle, if you will, because we all are swimming with people. It's Data Connect alone has a list a mile long. There's people who actually wait for years to be able to come to work there. And so what we're interested in is, you know, how do we create other entrepreneurs so it's not just a few of us who are making this work? And I know, Elizabeth, I'm really speaking for your husband, but I think he's involved in the entrepreneurs and is willing to donate some marketing time to that side.
Working with Dan, to promote this. I don't know if John, if he's on the line or not. He may just be.
John is, he's on the board.
He's on the chat,
okay.
Right?
Yeah, as Can Do John.
That's John. Maybe he'll come forth here, call in with a question or something, or make a contribution. I was hoping we'd hear from him too, but I'm sure he's listening.
Yeah, give us a call, John, if you want. The call-in number is 646-716-8158. We'd love to hear from John. He's another board member, very dynamic and funny person. We had just a great time. The board got together for the very first time in Florida, face-to-face. And we had a great meeting, and it was a great time, wasn't it, you guys? We really...
Oh, I loved it.
We hit it off, so...
Yeah.
Good things
and
are happening.
Taking advantage of the people who volunteer for you, I mercilessly use Paula's daughter, May, to help me with my Facebook and getting that because I don't know enough about it to make it work. And she actually has fun doing it. I remember one day she was all excited and said, you have more friends than my mom, you know, so she gets competitive. And, you know,
well, she and here she is, you know, a good example of a second-generation Urantia book reader, like Crystalline. And Crystalline has had such a wonderful experience with the Urantia book and with her parents, and her parents did such a good job of sharing the book with her and her brother David and making it a part of her life. And, you know, she's told me many times, I envy you that you found it at the end of this search where you were so hungry to find the truth and you found it, and I've always had it. And but she made a point to me the other day about second-generation Urantians. Do you remember what that was, Crystalline? Because it's really worth sharing.
Well, give me a little hint. We've talked about many things.
you
what
said
was it in regards to?
You said something to the effect that your whole approach is going to be different in the things that you bring to this movement. You have a gift as second generation Urantians that you're bringing to this movement. Do you remember what that was?
Well, one of the things that I had said is that we don't have nearly as much of a foundation of other ideas that we have to sort of chip away in order to replace them with more truth-based concepts of God and the universe, like that we live in a friendly universe, as opposed to we have to compete with each other just to get enough or just to get what we need.
More stability then.
More stability, and I think more of a grounded, I guess you'd say, family culture or cultural awareness of ourselves as cosmic citizens. And for some of us, at least some of those of us who have chatted together in the second generation group on Facebook, that we all share some common values that we find are not necessarily shared by all of our peers. And one of those is that we tend to be risk takers. We tend to not be afraid of failure. And it's something that we expect to fail. We expect to make mistakes. We expect to not always be right and that it's okay. We don't have the same fear of retribution.
And to provide something for you know, second generation Urantians and young people coming in, like the university and all of the things that we're working on right now. You know, Tim, you mentioned May. May is so excited about these projects, and she will be so integral going forward with these. She's really on board, and I think that, you know, the book tells us that children learn more from our loyalties, of the loyalties of their adult, their parents and their adult guardians and whatever, more than example or even precept. The loyalties of their adult associates is what strikes them the most. So whatever projects that we're loyal to, whatever projects we really jump in behind, ultimately they'll jump in on too.
That conversation brings up something really important for us. And this is where Robert Burns is one of our board members, and he's on the board of the University of California, Irvine. And one of the fascinating things that they're studying is how our life choices actually change somehow our genetics or our DNA or whatever, but it's transferred to our kids. The way we live our life tremendously impacts future generations. Now, we've known it impacted things. We didn't know hereditary-wise that it might affect things, too. And I think that that's what the Urantia book is trying to teach us, that who we are and how we are in every aspect of our life, whether it's business, or study or our children, especially our children, have tremendous impact for generations down the road. So you'll notice for a lot of people with the university, we're actually thinking 250 years down the road. What is that going to look like? So it's not for the weak-minded. It's for people who say, you know, how many things do I get to participate in my life that's going to make a difference 10 generations down the road? And what an honor it is to get to be a part of that.
Wow.
Well, I definitely had that sense when I was growing up that, you know, I was just so fortunate to be alive during this particular period in time. So fortunate to have had the benefit of these teachings to grow up with.
Yes.
Sorry, go ahead.
We have a caller. Shall we take a call?
Sure.
Well, this is John Callahan. Can Do John is my handle.
Hey John.
I was listening to you and also looking at the bulletin board or whatever it is, and it looked like I was being called to call.
So what?
I wanted to say a couple of things about the Urantia University communities that have been set up, and basically there are two that I'm involved in, I was involved with Victoria Clark in the creation of the Urantia Book Historical Society, and have served on its board since its creation, and that seemed a natural fit. So we're in the process now with our current Urantia Book Historical Society president, Jacob Dix, who lives actually in Sweden. By the way, that's testimony to the incredible world we live in, where we can be so connected through the cyberspace technology. But it seemed a natural connection for the Urantia Book Historical Society to be involved in some way, and we're kind of feeling our way through that process with Urantia University. And then secondly, when I was in Florida with Tim and the rest of the people, I got a chance to meet Dan Amix, who's been the past, I think, Tim, the past president of the Florida Students of the Urantia Book.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
For the last 3 years. And he's a business person. He was very interested in entrepreneurship. And basically that's the world I've lived in for 30-some-odd years as a consultant and as a person who worked with in the area of business development for a variety of companies, franchises mostly. And he told a great story, which I don't think anybody's told, but I would like to share it with your listeners, and that is that he has a friend, an acquaintance, a business acquaintance, who's a very honorable woman, a spiritually advanced, a religious person, high morals. He couldn't say nicer things about her. But then he had this conversation one day with her where she revealed to him that a supplier of hers had neglected to bill her for a shipment. And she was, I would say, mildly gleeful about that and did not see the disconnect between the morality of her life and the morality of her business. And it stunned Dan. He said, it just stunned me that people separate those. And I said, well, that's the life I've lived in for decades. And that I actually had turned clients away because of their moral disconnect between what they did on Sunday morning and said in church and how they lived with their family and then what they did in their businesses. And so Dan and I talked at great length, and I'm very excited about finding people who are interested, who have businesses of their own, and are interested in finding ways of applying the principles, the truths of the Urantia Book into their business world, and seeing that those can be successful, that you don't have to play the game the way by the immoral rules that have been developed I think Jim Wallace wrote an incredible article. He's the publisher of The Sojourner, which I've been subscribing to for years, about how business in the United States, certainly in the United States, has lost its moral compass. And I think right now, the Urantia University, as well as the Urantia entrepreneurs, is critical to helping, to giving people a way of re-finding that moral compass.
And, you know, really, what you just said, I think, John, and Tim did share that story briefly, but I'm glad you brought it up again because it really bears looking at this idea that we can live two separate lives, that we can live a business life, that anything goes, all bets are off, God does not come in there, morality, ethics do not come in there because, hey, it's just business. Sorry if that made you feel bad, but it's just business, you know. And
or sorry if we made you go bankrupt and lose all of your
right,
material
right,
possessions.
Yeah.
It's not personal. It's just business.
It's just business. Sorry if your loss is my gain. Hey, it's just business, right? And we've said that, and we've excused a whole host of very unsavory, greedy, selfish behaviors, and we need to stop. I mean, and I don't mean we, like just your ranch book. Obviously, the whole planet needs to look at this and say, wait a minute, if morality and ethics do not come into every aspect of our lives, then there's something wrong. And the golden rule holds us to a much higher standard than that. I mean, what Dan shared in Florida was that this woman was a good Christian woman.
Yes.
And he would have expected that her Christian ethics would have dictated that she would have immediately called the supplier and said, hey, you never billed me for this stuff. You can't afford to do that.
Right.
And what she did was really stealing. Yeah, it was a mistake. Her supplier made a mistake. But for her to benefit or profit from their mistake when it's going to hurt them really is another form of stealing.
Exactly.
And if it happened to her, she would expect the kindness of just human decency for somebody to call her and say, you didn't mean to do this. You made a mistake.
And the problem, I believe, is that people have been so consistently victimized that when they have an opportunity to victimize somebody else, they have this perverted way of thinking they're following the golden rule, which they interpret as do it to others before they do it to you.
Which, as was pointed out, is the lowest level of that,
right.
The purely human-based material level that, if you think it would feel good, do it to somebody, you know.
As Elizabeth said earlier in our study group last night, there's just this incredibly powerful statement that Jesus makes at the end of the Last Supper to his apostles regarding the golden rule, where he basically says that he's going to take it, he upsteps the golden rule, that it's not do unto others, you know, as you would have them do unto you, but do unto others as I would do unto you.
Right, and that is clearly... parental. That's parental love. I mean, how many people, you know, would steal from their children or harm their children?
Unfortunately, it's a large number.
Yeah. I should qualify that. How many loving parents would, you know. It's just a commentary about the planet that we live on, and I always like to think that we have to hold this torch high so that everybody can see. You know, it's like Jesus saying, you know, let your light so shine, like a city on a hill, and so that it can illuminate the room and give everybody light. And
I happen to have been fortunate to be working at Data Connect during the Katrina fiasco, and was able to watch my good friend and then my boss, Tim Hobbs, take a very dramatically assertive role in helping one of his major competitors, who happened to be from the New Orleans area. And not only did he personally decide he wanted to help this company, but basically got all the rest of the people at the company to buy in to this sort of service project. I know I'm putting you on the spot, Tim, but maybe you can explain a little bit about what happened there.
Well, you're very kind to bring that up and turn me teary-eyed, but, you know, that's not the way to win business from a competitor, you know, having a storm wipe them out. And one day, directly after Katrina, one of the employees of this company called us and said, could I get a job? You know, we're going to be put out of business. And I said, well, not if I can help it. And we basically adopted their business, and we took over their shows, and we kept their stuff running. And it was such an incredible episode. As a matter of fact, as it turns out, they ended up basically merging with us. They ended up coming into us later on. So by doing an unselfish act, we actually got a lot out of it. But that wasn't it.
That wasn't the reason you did it.
Yeah, if you follow God's leading, now this is me getting preachy, but, you know, we sense, you know, when we're passionate about doing good, God's will, we sense that there's a way to just let go of what we think needs to happen and just follow his or her leading. And in that adventure comes things that you never dreamed of happening. I mean, that is probably one of the occasions that I was the most proud of my team. We had an opportunity to merge with one of our big manufacturers many years ago. And my staff said, Tim, if you don't do it, we'll work for nothing just to be with you and just to build something with you. And, you know, we never got to look back since then. And it just, you know, what a privilege when you get to take these teachings into the world and when you get to let people be truly who they are. When people have the freedom to grow and learn who they are and what their purpose is and what can happen, we truly would not recognize the planet. It's just such a gift.
And how often do we have a chance in life to really do the right thing, to have such an impact? And that is a gift. And, you know, I'm a firm believer that when you strike that chord of righteousness, the melody reverberates all the way to paradise. And the Heavenly Father is going to honor that righteousness and all of the angels and all of our unseen friends. And that is going to benefit all of us many times more than what little material gain we think we might make from someone else's misfortune. You know, I posted on the board just a minute ago. My grandma always used to say, you know, you can't build happiness on heartache. If you have to hurt somebody to get ahead, it'll never make you happy. Mm-hmm. And those words were so wise to me. I mean, I hold that wisdom in my heart forever because it's about the means and the end, you know. And the book tells us that... And now I'm getting preachy, and I'm sorry, folks, you know me. But <yeah. laughs> the book tells us that the act is ours and the consequences are God's. Yeah. And all we have is the act. It's not about the end. He holds the end from the beginning. We get the part of getting there. How do we get there? It's all about how we get there and the means we use to get there. And in the moment, the means we use make all the difference. And the way we do things makes all the difference. And if we hold up light and truth and brotherhood and love, this world's going to be fine. We're going to reach our destiny of light and life, but we have to hold steadfast to those values. Those are cosmic values. You know, we simply can't treat each other bad and expect that we'll have some good outcome from that. It ain't going to happen.
And imagine what it would be like going to a business school where those kinds of principles were promoted as the fundamentals of doing business.
In other words, and I would put it as wanting the highest cosmic good of the individuals we work with.
Right.
Forgetting
about
ourselves, but wanting the highest, yeah.
Elizabeth, that's so true, and we've reached the point where I think our friends want to call and do our Easter
service.
And that was such a high note, the highest cosmic good for everyone involved.
There you go. That's our mission statement.
That's it. And I want to thank you guys so much for coming on. Thank you, John, Elizabeth, Tim. Thank you so much for all that you're doing.
Paula and Crystalline, thank you so much for this opportunity to have the conversation. It's been a joy. Happy Easter, everyone.
Happy Easter. Thank you.
Thank you guys for putting this on every single week and having to find speakers and having to do this and that. You know, you're very good people to put all this together.
It's such a
big Sam.
I think they do it with a lot of love. A lot of love.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
God bless.
Okay.
Hello, is this Diane?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. You are on, and we've saved the last 30 minutes of the show for your joyful Easter observance.
Yes, it is such a pleasure to be here, Paula. Wonderful. Thank you for asking us, Pato and myself.
Hi, Pato.
Hi.
Hello, Pato.
Hi. How are you doing, Paula?
Very good. Crystalline is with me, too.
Hi, Pato.
Hi.
Hi, Crystalline.
Hi, Diane. Happy
Easter. And you know what I should say? Hi, beautiful family.
Hello.
Hello, beautiful sister.
That's right.
And
well,
brother.
You're in for a beautiful surprise, my friends, and all the listeners, because if I can speak personally from my heart, I received an extraordinary gift from heaven once again. A few months ago, I was taking a bath, quiet at home, praying and talking with Jesus, and listening to Words of Christ too from Pato. And I was so moved, and all of a sudden, I had this inspiration, Pato has to do a Words of Christ 3. So I got out of the bath, I called him, and I said, Pato, you know what? There has to be a Words of Christ 3. It is so beautiful and so inspiring. He said, you know, Diane, I really like the idea. You're right. He said, thank you for calling me. I said, well, under one condition, that you allow me to be there if I can when you record, because it is going to be so extraordinary when you do Words of Christ 3. So last week, Pato sent me an email and said, Diane, do I get your blessing? I'm going in studio to do part 3. And I was stunned. Wow, this is going so fast. You know, it's happening for real. I called him back and I said, Pato, would you allow me? I mean, if you say no, it's totally fine with me. But if you say yes, it would be such a gift and a privilege to be there witnessing you recording Words of Christ 3. He said, you're more than welcome. Luckily enough, I was able to arrange my schedule, and I came here in studio with Pato and Michael. He will tell you more about it. But lo and behold, how little did I know that Jesus had planned something else. He had planned that I help Pato in the recording, because, you know, it's always important. It's always helpful. It's always helpful when you get some secondhand some objective opinion about what you're doing. And it turned out that the energy between Pato and his engineer, Michael DiMattia, and myself, our energies literally melded into one energy. And everybody is going to be in for an extraordinary surprise with this Words of Christ 3. It is a gift for the good of all. And it is so beautiful. I'm so happy, Paula and Priscillian, to be sharing this with you because I do not take this for granted by far.
Well, that's wonderful. And you know, our dear friend Larry Watkins uploaded the file, Pato, and it's all ready to go. It's all queued up. So whenever you're ready, I'll play it. And I know you guys have a couple things planned.
Yes.
You're both such great ministers, so.
Actually, we had talked about that, Pato and myself, and you agreed, Paula. So you've been sharing on your program for a while now this wonderful work called God Calling. Your previous guest from the Urantia University mentioned at one point, oh, I felt the calling of calling, you know, to call. Well, God Calling is an extraordinary work. It's a practical book, how to get in personal contact with Jesus. It was revealed in 1933, just around the same time as the Urantia Revelation was revealed to humanity. And it contains little daily quotes that were received by two listeners who to this day have remained anonymous and that Jesus used to reveal messages to his children on earth, on Urantia. And I would like to start by reading, you asked me to read something from God Calling, Paula, so I would like to read a quote. Actually, it's a double quote. It's called Easter Joy and Risen Life, and it is totally, completely in line with the Urantia Revelation. I see the Urantia Revelation as like the big universal library and God Calling as the spiritual exercise, just like when you go to the gym and you practice lifting weights or whatever, then you get your oxygen going and you feel fit. Well, you feel spiritually fit by going through Jesus' calling of his messages. And so it goes like this. Easter joy. I lay my loving hands on you in blessing. Wait in love and longing to feel their tender pressure. And as you wait, courage and hope will flow into your being, irradiating all your lives with the warm sun of my presence. Let all go this Easter tide. Loosen your hold on earth, its care, its worries, even its joys. Unclasp your hands, relax, and then the tide of Easter joy will come. Put aside all thought of the future, of the past. Relinquish all to get the Easter sacrament of spiritual life. So often man, crying out for some blessing, has yet such tight hold on some earth treasure that he has no hand to receive mine as I hold it out in love. Easter is the wonder time of all the year. A blessing is yours to take. Sacrifice all to that. Risen life. The call comes on this my day for all who love me to arise from earth bands, from sin and sloth and depression, distrust, fear, all that hinders the risen life, to arise to beauty, to holiness, to joy, to peace, to work inspired by love and joy, to rise from death to life. Remember that death was the last enemy I destroyed. So with death, my victory was complete. You have nothing then to fear. Sin too is conquered and forgiven as you live and move and work with me. All that depresses you, all that you fear are powerless to harm you. They are only phantoms. The real forces I conquered in the wilderness, the Garden of Gethsemane, on the cross, in the tomb. Let nothing hinder your risen life. Risen with Christ, said my servant Paul. Seek to know more and more of that risen life. That is, the life of conquest. Of that risen life, was it truly said, I live, yet not I, but Christ lives in me. Fear and despair and tears come as you stand by the empty tomb. They have taken away my Lord, and I know not where they have laid him. Rise from your fears and go out into the sunlight to meet me, your risen Lord. Each day will have much in it that you will meet either in the spirit of the tomb or in the spirit of resurrection. Deliberately choose the one and reject the other. Isn't that beautiful?
Oh, man.
That's lovely.
You know, it's the whole world needs to get over our obsession with darkness and death and
yes.
focus on light and life.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So true.
I'm sure you want to hear our beloved Pato talk and then let you listen to this.
Okay, of course. Take her away, Pato. Pato, are you there? Oh, friends, we just lost Diane and Pato. I'm sure they'll call back. they dropped off. You know how phones go. So here they are. Hold on.
Hi.
Hello, we lost you guys for a moment.
Yes.
Are you there? Hi, Pato.
We were lost, but now we are found.
You're here.
Yes. I just wanted to let you guys that we are actually, we're over in Boston, Massachusetts. When I recorded the words of Christ too, there was a Urantia reader by the name of Michael DiMattia, who was a producer I met at ICO8. And I basically went to his studio and realized he was a great producer, and we completed the words of Christ too. And then when it was time to do the words of Christ 3, I got a message that it was coming up to that time. And then I got a phone call from Diane LeBrec from Canada confirming that it was that time. So I started to work towards this project, which is now the culmination of the project and is the trilogy. This is the last one I will be doing. And I went in search for Michael, and I couldn't find him for a while. Michael DiMattia, that is. And when I eventually got through to him, he told me he had moved from Los Angeles, and his partner's mother was very ill, so they relocated back to his hometown so that she could take care of her mother. And I had a choice of going back to England to record the album and then come back and mix it, or stay in the States and record it and then bring it to Michael. So I recorded the album. All of the parts of the album were recorded during a road trip. And my keyboard player, who is now a Urantia book reader, Antoinette Hall, recorded all of the keyboards and strings for Words of Christ 3.
Yeah.
And then I remembered that Diane had asked me if she could be in the recording studio. And I had no intention of inviting her to the studio or realizing that she would have enough time, you know, because I know that she's putting on the United Urantia family gathering. So I wasn't going to, you know, impose or try and pressure her to be there, but I knew she had a desire to be there. And rather than going to the studio without her knowing about it, I thought I would at least give her the opportunity to know I was going in the studio. You know, and I asked for her blessing so that she wouldn't be upset with me when she found out that Birds of Christ 3 had been recorded without her. And when I sent her the message, you know, she said she would love to be there and she would make time to be there, which I was blown away by. And when I realized it, where Michael had moved, relocated to, was only 4 hours away from the border of Canada where Diane was. So she had something like a 3.5-hour drive to get to the studio, which is amazing when you consider she was the only person out of all the thousands of people I know who asked if she could be at the recording of Words of Christ 3, that she was so close to the studio. You know, it was kind of mind-boggling. So anyway, the first day I went to the studio and got all the technical side ready with Michael, and the next day when we started to voice, Diane turns up. And, you know, she sits down and she gets her book and she starts reading while I'm narrating and she goes, hold on, you know, there's italics there. And I had no idea that there was an italics in the book because I was reading from something I'd printed off the internet. And the internet version didn't have the italics. So immediately she became the director of expression. And has assisted very, very greatly to make sure that the mistakes I've made in the past weren't made on this version. Because there were times in the past when I was reading where you could almost feel at certain stages that I was reading. And there's other parts where I'm taking my time and you can feel as though the spirit is really coming through. So the three of us would pray every day before we recorded, welcoming Christ presence to be with us and allowing the spirit of truth to work through us. And I truly believe that the Words of Christ 3 will be very well received by many people. It is a very beautiful work of art, and Christ's words come through loud and clear. And I take no credit for this whatsoever. You know, I'm very grateful to Michael for Michael DiMattia for his technical abilities. I'm very grateful to Diane for her patience and consistency throughout the project to help me avoid making certain word errors, which, you know, sometimes when you're reading a book aloud, you'll skip a word without realizing it. And somebody else in the study group might say, hold on, you missed a word. so that was very...
That happened.
Yes, it happens. And sometimes the sentences still make sense without those words, but it doesn't have the full meaning without those missing words. So I'm very, very, very happy with the work that has been completed. We are now in the mixing stages of the album. We won't be finished until about 4 days' time with the mixing process, and then I will have to go to a mastering studio to master the whole project before it goes into production. But we sent you a track, which will be the seventh track on the second CD. And I hope you guys enjoy it. Diane wants to say something before you play it, but, you know, I just want to share it with you guys today and just wish everyone all the best, you know, and just remind everybody that, you know, we are all a part of the soup of life, light and life. You know, some of us are the broth, some of us are the salt, some of us are the vegetables, you know, some of us are the meat, whatever elements you want to have in this beautiful soup of light and life, every one of us makes a major contribution to the flavor, and everyone is called in whatever occupation they have on this planet during this lifetime to make whatever small contribution they can make to us going forward towards light and life.
Thank you so much, Pat.
I just want to add one thing for everyone to know. To reiterate what Pato said, the track that everyone will listen to right now, I hope that everyone will be inhabited by the spirit of the message like we, the three of us, were. When it happened, I just wanted to share. And by the way, I would love everyone to know that the whole Words of Christ 3 will be launched at the United Urantia Family Festival, and I can't wait for people to listen to it. But this one track that we sent called From This Time On, when we started to do that, we had prayed, and like I said, our three energies, Michael's, Pato's, and mine, melded into one energy, and Pato was just inhabited by the Spirit of Jesus, reading the words of Christ, and all of a sudden, we were not even looking at each other. Michael had his back to us, focusing on his great expertise of engineering, and Pato was focused on his reading, and I was. And all of a sudden, Michael says, "Oh, my God, I'm just about on the verge of tears." As he said that, I had tears running down my cheeks. And then Pato said, "I was just about ready to cry." And I was saying to myself, "No, not now. No, you can't. You still have to work, you know." And it was so beautiful. The Spirit transpired through this. And so it has to do also with the beautiful place where we were received with Michael's parents, who are so incredibly beautiful to us, and the garden and nature, I mean, everything. So I can't wait that we listen to this. I just hope that it will do the same result as it did to the three of us. It is very, very dearly precious to Pato, I'm sure.
Well, thank you for that beautiful introduction, Diane and Pato, and thanks for coming on and sharing with us today your sweet spirits. It just means so much. It's a great way to kick off Easter. And before I play Pato's piece, I just want to hold in prayer all of our dear friends who need prayer right now, especially Victoria in California, Victoria Clark, who is one of the founders of the Historical Society. And Andre, a request has come from the board for prayers for our dear friend and brother Andre. So we'll hold them in light and life and in the circle of light, and we'll listen to the words of Christ by Pato Benton. Thanks, friend.
From this time on, if any man would have fellowship with us, let him assume the obligations of sonship and follow me. And when I am no more with you, think not that the world will treat you better than it did your master. If you love me, prepare to prove this affection by your willingness to make the supreme sacrifice. And mark well my words, I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners. The Son of Man came not to be ministered to, but to minister and to bestow his life as the gift for all. I declare to you that I have come to seek and to save those who are lost. No man in this world now sees the Father except the Son, who came forth from the Father. But if the Son be lifted up, he will draw all men to himself. And whosoever believes this truth of the combined nature of the Son shall be endowed with life that is more than age abided. We may not yet proclaim openly that the Son of Man is the Son of God, but it has been revealed to you. Wherefore do I speak boldly to you concerning these mysteries? Though I stand before you in this physical presence, I came forth from God the Father. Before Abraham was, I am. I did come forth from the Father into this world as you have known me, and I declare to you that I must presently leave this world and return to the work of my Father. And now can your faith comprehend the truth of these declarations in the face of my warning you that the Son of Man will not meet the expectations of your fathers as they conceived the Messiah? My kingdom is not of this world. Can you believe the truth about me in the face of the fact that, though the foxes have holes and the birds of heaven have nests, I have not where to lay my head. Nevertheless, I tell you that the Father and I are one. He who has seen me has seen the Father. My Father is working with me in all these things, and he will never leave me alone in my mission, even as I will never forsake you when you presently go forth to proclaim this gospel throughout the world. And now have I brought you apart with me and by yourselves for a little while, that you may comprehend the glory and grasp the grandeur of the life to which I have called you, the faith adventure of the establishment of my Father's kingdom in the hearts of mankind, the building of my fellowship, of living association with the souls of all who believe this gospel.
That was so beautiful. Thank you so much. Well, now, my friends, we're at the end of another show. It's the day before Easter Sunday, 2010. It's a pleasure and a privilege to be with you guys here every Saturday. We're going to keep doing it as long as we can. Right, Crystalyn?
Absolutely.
Yay!
Yay!
And we know Diane is on board. She's going to be here helping us. Crystalyn, I'm here. Anne's here. Pato, you're always welcome, bro. We love you so much, and thank you so much for your ministry. Words of Christ is just incredible. And what a wonderful, wonderful way to celebrate Easter with the good news. Hey, have you guys heard the good news?
Tell me.
He is risen.
Yay! Yes.
You know, Paula and Crystalyn, I would like to share also one last thing before we part physically. Michael DiMattia has shown us yesterday something incredible. Both Pato and I, we were blown away. He's actually going to show at the inaugural, at the birth of the Urantia family on Earth, a work that he has done, and he was so happy to share it with us.
Mm-hmm.
And he's actually reworked the words of Bill Sadler Jr. into a work of art that everyone who comes will be just like, wow. Yesterday, Pato and I, we went like, oh, wow, this is something else. It is so beautiful what he's done. It's a novelty. I said, Michael, you have to come and show this to the family. He said, that will be my pleasure. So I said, let's make it a deal. You're coming and you're sharing this with everyone. Pato, wasn't it great?
Yes, it's Bill Sadler narrating some of the very famous quotes from the Urantia book, and Michael has composed a musical composition around the words, and he's even included a light show, an iTunes light show attached to it, which looks like planets and stars bursting and blending and the birth of the universe. The light show is something that I would imagine the celestial beings portraying to us, and us just standing there in awe. It's so beautiful.
Beautiful. Can't wait. Well, on that happy note, we'll come to a close for this week. And, thanks again, dear friends, and happy Easter to all of you.
Happy Easter.
Happy eternal life.
Happy Easter.
That's Easter.
He is risen.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, Diane.
Bye,
Crystalyn. Thanks so much.
Goodbye, and goodbye to our faithful listening audience. Thank you so much for being with us for another week. And best Easter wishes, and have a wonderful week this coming week. We look forward to talking to you next Saturday.
Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. If you would like more information about the Urantia Book, or if you just have comments or questions, please feel free to email us at cosmiccitizen@xnet.com. That's cosmiccitizen@xnet, the letter X, N-E-T, .com. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.